WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The emphasis on family values in this year's presidential campaign is good news for my guest, Bob Knight. He works with the Family Research Council, a lobbying group in Washington, D.C. He directs the council's cultural studies project, examining issues related to gender and sexual orientation and federal funding of the arts. He previously was a senior fellow at the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Today brought some potentially bad news for Knight. A New York Times CBS News poll indicates that the public is far more interested in hearing the presidential candidates address the economy and health care than family values and homosexuality. I asked Knight for his reaction to the poll.
Well, I think it's all tied together. Economics cannot be divorced from family values. They're very much a part of family values. If families can't afford to protect their children in the way they hope to do so because of economic considerations, that becomes a family issue. And families today are so overtaxed that they're being forced to make decisions that they'd rather not. They're being forced to make choices that they'd rather not be forced into, such as putting children in daycare. This is not to say some children will not be placed in daycare, but what has been missed in the debate is the argument that we need a level playing field that would allow parents who favor parental care just the same sort of tax advantages that you can now get by placing your child in daycare.
In the first part of your statement, I thought you were paraphrasing Bill Clinton. Isn't that his platform, that the greatest threat to families now is a failing economy, and that's why we should be focusing on the economy instead of family values?
Yeah, he talks a good game, but from what I've seen of his program, he would exacerbate the problem by raising taxes on all families. It looks like a gimmick to me, this idea of taxing the rich to relieve the middle class. It never works out that way. The middle class is always the prime target because the middle class has the money. If you taxed everything from the top 5% of all Americans, I think it would only run government for a few days. It's nonsense to use this Robin Hood rhetoric to try to get middle-class votes. It might work if he fools enough people.
You're emphasizing that it's taxes that are destroying the family, but if there's an economic problem, isn't the greater problem unemployment and low wages?
I think the main problem is a crisis of values. And
wait, you just said that the real problem was the economy.
Well, I think the problem is the economy is shackled by a huge government that is trying to take the part of the family. Government, as it grows, takes on family functions, child care, moral instruction. Just about every function that used to be performed by the family has been taken on by government, done badly. It has exacerbated social problems, and now we're being asked to support even more social programs to make up for the damage that the government has already done. I think if families are encouraged to stay together and are left alone, that, more than anything else, would solve not only our social problems but our economic problems.
You had just said a moment ago that really what the government should do is not take on all these responsibilities, and yet family values is like a key part of the Republican platform. So what exactly do you think the government role should be in family life?
I think it ought to support the privacy and sovereignty of the two-parent traditional family as best it can, since that's the building block of civilization. It's not just another configuration, not just an accident of people happening to live together. Today, more and more policies are being framed that treat the two-parent heterosexual traditional family as just one variant. And that's got to stop, because that has hurt us more than anything.
So you want the government to encourage the primacy of the two-parent heterosexual family. What do you want the government to do to encourage the primacy of that particular type of family?
Yeah, I don't even use that rhetoric, that particular type of family. That's the family, mom, dad, and the kids. Anything else is a dysfunctional family or an arbitrary grouping. I don't think two lesbians and a poodle is a family. It's a household, perhaps, and they have rights.
What about a single mother whose husband left her and the kids? Was that a family?
It's a family, but it's a dysfunctional family. It's unfortunate because the children need fathers. And this idea that a single-parent family is the equivalent of a two-parent family is a lie. Everybody knows it, most of all single mothers who have to bear those burdens.
What about in a family where the two parents aren't in love anymore and they feel that they should get a divorce, that the marriage is just not working? Should the government do anything there?
Well, the government already has encouraged them to split by making it easier and easier to do so and to pay the woman, step into daddy's role with a paycheck, and say, don't worry, if you split, we'll take care of everything. That's not a neutral role. That's an attack role. That encourages adults not to live up to their vows and to their responsibilities to their children. You know, we've got this cultural problem of individual choice, that choice is the icon. It's above all. We don't talk about obligations. We certainly don't talk about sacrifice anymore. And we confuse sacrifice, real compassion, with the idea that the government should do something about it. I'd like to see government quit interfering with families by and actually supporting them. You're right, I'm not neutral about this. I would like to see the government openly support tax policies that encourage families to stay together instead of to break up. And one way to do that would be to increase the tax exemption for children. Right now, it's at, I think, $2,500. And in 1948, when families were much more supported by government, it was, I think, at $800. The equivalent today would be $8,000 to give parents the same sort of tax relief they had in 1948. And now taxes at all levels, federal, state, and local, are taking a far greater share of family income, forcing many mothers to work and many fathers to take two jobs. This is the government at war with the family. And what the government offers is, okay, we'll help you out. We've taxed you into this situation. Now we're going to offer you programs. We'll take care of your children. You need not do that anymore. We'll provide welfare. We'll step in with all these things that you could have been doing yourselves if we just left you alone.
Let me ask you if you think that your rhetoric matches your positions. In other words, you're saying that you think that the government should get out of family life.
No, it ought to encourage
life. Yeah, but on the other hand, you told me that the government should get out of family life. On the other hand,
I'd settle for them getting out.
Right. So quit interfering with families was the language that you used. But
yeah.
On the other hand, you want government to make it harder for a couple to divorce. You want the government to establish what a family really is, a two-parent heterosexual family. So it seems to me, really, although your rhetoric is about the government not interfering with families, the policies that you're advocating is about the government defining families and making it more difficult for families to split up. So isn't that really advocating more government interference in family life?
No, that's nonsense. I'm talking about the government removing policies that now tend to lead people into splitting up. Divorce law is very significant. Because everywhere divorce laws have been eased, divorces have soared. It's sent a societal message that you need not live up to your vows or your contract. To me, this is there's an interesting lawsuit underway, and it's a man who didn't want to be divorced from his wife, loves his children, and is suing his wife to the effect that she has broken a contract she agreed to. They took vows to love and cherish each other. I think he's got a good case that it's a breach of contract. We really worry about whether a used car we buy is up to the terms of the contract, and we'll fight tooth and nail for that. But when it comes to the vows of a marriage, marriages don't get much legal support anymore, even though they're probably the most important contract we can make.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Bob Knight, and he's with the Family Research Council. He directs the Cultural Studies Project. And the Family Research Council is the lobbying and education division of Focus on the Family. Can you give us your report card on the Republican and Democratic parties so far in the presidential campaign? Let's start with the Republicans, since they just had their convention and we heard their platform most recently.
Yeah. I like a lot of their rhetoric, but again, I'm more interested in policies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a conservative, and I would like to see government taken down a peg. I'd like to see less government and therefore less taxation. I think I trust the people more than a lot of policymakers do to lead their own lives. I think government does have a role, though, in fostering things that are proven to be beneficial. And I think the Republicans, if they follow through on the policies they say they're interested in, would be on the right track. I think Bill, now onto the Democrats.
Yeah.
I think the Bill Clinton has is smart enough to have picked up on the family values rhetoric. He knows it resonates in every American household, and he's a smart politician, and I don't blame him for capitalizing on it. But the Democratic Party policies over the years traditionally have been to increase government at the expense of families, to offer social programs instead of policies that would encourage people to care for their own and to stay together. And I don't see any change there. I don't see any fundamental thrust. If anything, I see a loosening of standards, a loosening of sexual standards. The Democrats have embraced the gay rights agenda. And what gay rights is not about tolerance. It's not about diversity. It's about a well-financed, well-organized group of political activists who want to force their lifestyle on other people. Witness the Boy Scouts. They've been going along for 82 years with their values intact, and suddenly they're under fierce attack by homosexual groups, by atheists, by even feminist groups who want to mix girls in with them. This is not about tolerance and diversity. If we really believed in that, we'd let the Scouts be the Scouts. Homosexuals can form their own organizations. It is a free country. But when they try to impose their values on a traditional value-minded organization like the Boy Scouts, you can see they're the aggressors. They're not the victims.
If a homosexual wants to have a job or housing, is that forcing his values on somebody else?
Well, it depends on the situation. I know cases in which landlords who have families in their houses have had a very difficult time. They've had quiet homosexuals who don't bother anyone, and I don't think anyone really objects to that. But in one instance, a guy held orgies, and guys were coming and going, and this guy was unable to evict that tenant because he fell back on gay rights, saying, "Oh, you're just after me because I'm a homosexual."
Well, I think
whereas
it's fair to say, yeah.
If he was heterosexual and he had women at all hours and they felt it was impacting on families badly, you'd think the landlord would have a right to protect the other families in the building. But they always use gay rights. It's kind of a trump card. I can do anything I want, and now I can use this card of bigotry to play against you. You go along with my game, or you're a bigot. I'm going to smear you.
Well, let me say, if we follow your logic, then if we can find a case in which an African-American has used discrimination as a way to get the upper hand in a situation in which they were actually in the wrong, if they exploited equal rights in that situation.
Yeah, that's wrong too.
Well, then maybe we should consider not giving African American civil rights because a couple of people have exploited it.
How about giving everyone the same civil rights?
Well, that's, I think, what the question is.
No, it isn't. It's about special privileges where you have a particular legal standing based on, in this case, a sexual orientation. And you can't compare the homosexual struggle with that of the black civil rights movement. For starters, it's a behavior. It's not an immutable characteristic like race in which you can't really hide it. If you look in an auditorium, you can't tell who's gay and who isn't. You can only tell when someone's gay is when they if they make a point of it. But the only civil rights protections we have now that are special, that single people out, are because of ethnic origin, race, handicap, sex, and religious preferences. And that's based in the Constitution. There's nothing that has ever been drawn from the Constitution that indicates we should now grant special privileges based on behaviors. If you start doing that, the sky is wide open to give special privileges based on any kind of behavior, whether it's nail biting or alcoholism. I think that Americans with Disabilities Act has opened the door wide to that kind of distinction.
You've said that homosexuality only becomes an issue when homosexuals make it one. That is when when they force their choice of behavior or approval of their choice of behavior on others.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is it's okay to be homosexual as long as you keep it a secret and never do anything in public that would all reveal your orientation. Is that not like saying, in a way, it's okay to practice Judaism as long as you don't practice it in public because, by the way, we're closing down all the synagogues?
See, again, you're making the false comparison between religion and a behavior.
No, I'm just saying about whether something's, you know, you can practice something as long as it's not in public. That's where I'm trying to make the analogy.
Yeah, well, some things shouldn't be practiced in public. That's why we have public laws to that effect. That's why we have laws against public nudity, because that would create such a sexual tension.
But for you, practicing in public is just saying that that's what you are, not having sex in public.
Or why would you define yourself by your sexuality anyway?
well, I'm sure you'd let us know you're heterosexual and you'd have no problem with that. I mean,
yeah, but I don't
you want the family to be defined by its heterosexuality.
That's because the family is defined by its heterosexuality. And that's universal. That's not something we cooked up in late 20th century America. I mean, that's just men and women. That's how nature works. And any variant from that is indeed a variant and should not be equated with what has been the natural relations between men and women for centuries, for thousands of years.
Can I be honest with you? I'm always really surprised when people like yourself are very, very comfortable speaking so negatively about a whole group of people.
No, no, not the people, the practice. I have friends who are homosexuals.
That was going to be my next
question.
And
I worry about them. No, no, they're very good friends. In fact, I've got a couple who are like brothers to me. And I worry about them. I worry about what they do because I know the statistics. It's a very unhealthy lifestyle generally. I hope they remain monogamous. I don't know if they have. But just as I would have a friend who's an alcoholic, I could still love that person and not approve of his abuse of alcohol. I have homosexual friends, and I can disapprove of homosexual behavior and still love them. It's the old Christian concept of you condemn the sin but not the sinner, because we're all sinners. We all fall short. And homosexuals are no different from anybody else in that regard.
But let me ask you, do you have long debates with your homosexual friends about homosexuality? Or is it something you really talk about a lot with them?
No, because it isn't an issue. Uh-huh. I just see them as people. And we talk about anything, sports, movies, whatever.
Uh-huh.
They haven't made it an issue. Now, if they came to me and said, look, we want to present a positive portrayal of this to your children. We want to impose on them the idea that this is just as good an arrangement as what you and your wife have, that's where I'd part company with them. I'd say, well, I'm sorry, I'm uncomfortable with that. But so far they have not done that because these are decent guys who know what they're doing is variant, it's abnormal, and would not push it on other people. They respect families.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. My guest is Bob Knight. He directs the Family Research Council's Cultural Studies Project. And this is the Lobbying and Education Division of Focus on the Family. We'll take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Bob Knight is my guest of the Family Research Council, formerly a researcher with the Heritage Foundation. During the Reagan years, many of the pro-family groups were headed by televangelists. And
well, a couple of them were. Jerry Falwell, Moral Majority.
Right.
I don't know. What other one are you talking about? Pat Robertson, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Also, well, I guess what I'm thinking here is that I think the pro-family values were often espoused the most by televangelists and preached the most by televangelists. But in the intervening years, many of those televangelists have been discredited, and I wonder what effect you think that's had on the pro-family movement.
Well, I eye a lot of the televangelists with a lot of criticism. Some of them are okay. I have no problem with them. Others, I think, are opportunists, and I don't think they really reflect the great mandate they feel they've been given. It just so happens the main proponents of family values, the Jerry Falwells, the Pat Robertsons, have never been discredited. They're honorable men who are going about their business. Some of the other evangelists, Jim Baker, has been discredited. I never saw him as a major spokesman for family values in the first place. I always did view him with a critical eye. So, but I think it's hurt. I think the idea is the media in particular has painted with a very broad brush trying to say two things. One, because a few televangelists are scoundrels, then all of them are. And two, this must mean all Christians are scoundrels. I see it as a major attack on just the idea of Christianity itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the gay rights agenda as the first step in the criminalization of Christianity in this country. Because it's an effort to say you cannot hold those beliefs and we're going to go after you with everything we've got, with all the government power we can muster, we're going to say that you cannot believe what you believe.
Obviously, you think that homosexuality is doing everything close to bringing the apocalypse. I mean,
No. I just see them as the organized homosexuals, not the many homosexuals who are minding their own business, living their lives. I'm talking about the militants who have organized. I see them as the vanguard in the cultural war, yes. They're on the cutting edge in the arts debate, in the debate over sex education, what should be included, what should be left out, what's proper content for public broadcasting. You can find them at the cutting edge, and I think they have cut that role out for them.
In talking about family values, this is a question that often comes to mind. Now President Reagan was one of the big political supporters of a pro-family platform, family values platform. In President Reagan's own life, we saw that he had been divorced, and in coming to know more about the family over the years, we found out that Patty Davis, his daughter, lived out of wedlock with a lover. She took drugs. She says in her memoirs that her mother, Nancy Reagan, treated her abusively. I'm not trying to pass judgment on the family, but I'm wondering what you make of that, that somebody who was leading the pro-family value platform really had troubles in his own family. And what does that say? Well, I'll leave that for you to interpret.
Well, I think it's ironic and unhappy that all these things occurred. I don't think that discredits President Reagan's embrace of the pro-family agenda. He knew what was right and true and worth protecting, even if his own family didn't live up to that ideal. But I think that may be part of the problem of why the Reagan agenda wasn't fully completed. It kind of fell apart in that second term. The commitment seemed to disappear. And I thought some of what happened was regrettable. And I'd like to see more commitment to the pro-family agenda. But as far as the Reagans, I mean, there is no perfect family in the United States. That doesn't mean we should stop making distinctions between what is good and right and true and noble and just and what is the best environment for raising children. In no way does it discredit the president's advocacy of traditional families. As I say, it's a very unhappy thing, but there's unhappiness in a lot of families. Does not discredit the idea of family.
Okay. Well, Bob Knight, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for talking with me, Terry.
Bob Knight directs the Cultural Studies Project of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.